This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents We Are Legion, We Are Bob, Bobiverse, Book 1. Written by Dennis E. Taylor. Performed by Ray Porter.
Part 1. 1. Bob Version 1.0.
So, you'll cut my head off. I raised an eyebrow at the sales critter. I was baiting him. I knew it, he knew it, I knew he knew it. He grinned at me, happy to go along with the routine as long as me and my wallet continued to pay attention.
Mr. Johansson.
It's Bob, please, you're not talking to my father. The Cryo-Eterna sales rep, the name tag identified him as Kevin, nodded and gestured toward the big placard which displayed the cryonics process in ghoulish detail. I took a moment to note his Armani suit and $100 haircut. It appeared there was money in cryonics.
Bob, there's no point in freezing the entire body. Remember, the idea is to wait for advancements in medicine to be able to cure whatever killed you. By the time they can resuscitate your corpse, they'll likely to be able to grow you a whole new body. That would be easier, in fact, than trying to patch up the old one.
That's just insane enough to be true.
All right, Kevin, I'm sold.
I looked down at the papers he'd set out in front of me. 10,000 deposit, annual payments, insurance. Kevin stood patiently, letting me scan the information without interruption. I might be drunk with my newfound wealth, but almost a decade as an engineer and a business owner wouldn't let me do anything without checking all the documentation. Finally, I was satisfied. I signed the paperwork, wrote a check, and shook hands with Kevin.
You are now a client of Cryo Eterna, Inc., he said, handing me a card. Keep this in your wallet at all times. In case of death, we will be contacted. Once death has been pronounced, we will behead me. Yep, and freeze your head, pending medical advances sufficient to bring you back. The guidelines for setting up a trust are in your information package.
Kevin handed me a thick, bright blue folder with a barely visible cloud pattern and the corporate logo emblazoned on the front.
We'll have the formal documents printed up and mailed to your home address, and welcome to Cryo Eterna.
With that, he stuck out his hand and we shook, again. I did a little skip step as I left the Cryo Eterna office. The trust had already been set up, but I didn't want Kevin to know I had decided to sign up before I even walked into the office. No point in making his job too easy. I couldn't decide if this was a canny investment in my future or a mind-blowingly stupid waste of money. Well, what the hell? The sum the TerraSoft was paying me for my software company ensured financial stability for the rest of my life, and now, beyond. Not to mention a significant upgrade in my lifestyle. I'd been attending the Vortex SF convention every year since they first started up in Las Vegas, but this year, I wasn't part of the riffraff. As I walked the two blocks from the Cryo Eterna offices to the convention, I pulled the VIP pass out of my pocket and put the lanyard around my neck. This pass gave me many extras over the standard item. Access to hospitality suites, ability to bypass lineups for autographings, and reserved spaces for panels, among other things. I'd also bought a pass for Jenny. And there it was. I'd invoked she who must not be named. I stopped dead in the middle of the sidewalk, earning glares from tailgaters and a muttered curse from a Jedi Knight wannabe. I began deep breathing to still the panic attack. This time it took only moments to get myself under control. Nothing like practice, I guess. I was still having several panic attacks per day, but that was way down from just after the breakup. It was like having a bad tooth. You keep poking at it with your tongue, even knowing that it's going to hurt each time. With a conscious act of will, I brought my thoughts back on track. I'd taken advantage of the VIP pass by reserving a space in a couple of back-to-back panels, and the first one was starting in less than 15 minutes. Exploring the Galaxy featured Lawrence Vienne as one of the speakers. He was a popular and prolific science fiction author, and many of his story concepts had helped shape the modern genre. It took only a couple of minutes to get to the convention center and find the seminar rooms, Con staffers had already gotten the VIPs seated and were about to let everyone else enter when I pulled up, panting and waving my pass. The attendant motioned me in with no more than a glance. I got an aisle seat by pure fluke. As I rushed into the room, someone stood up right in front of me and turned to walk out. Without breaking stride, I slid into the vacant seat, and the woman seated beside me did a double take. She must have thought the other guy had morphed. I turned my head to watch as they opened the doors to the common rabble. People poured into the conference room until attendants had to close the doors or face the wrath of the fire marshal. The Las Vegas hotels tended to have good air conditioning. No one wanted distracted or uncomfortable clients, but a lot of the attendees had been in costume for too long. I tried to breathe through my mouth while hoping the ventilation would eventually catch up. In typical con fashion, very little concession had been made for aesthetics. The tables and chairs were the standard folding variety, and the session information was written on a large whiteboard, in black marker because I guess color would be too much bother. No one cared. The moderator, a short, round black man with a permanent smile, called for attention.
"Good afternoon, gentle beings. Today we'll be hearing from Lawrence Vienne."
Spontaneous cheering forced him to pause.
"Who will talk about the technological and economic prerequisites to get interstellar probes into space. After that, Dr. Gerald Carlisle,"
more cheers,
"will talk about the biology of extraterrestrial life. We're looking forward to a great panel today. So without further ado, I give you Mr. Vienne."
The applause went on for several minutes. Lawrence smiled patiently through it and gave the occasional wave. Finally, it died down and I settled in for a good listen. I sniffed at my clothing just to make sure I hadn't picked up some of the odor from the room. The second panel had been even more ripe than the first. If not for the subject matter, I'd have bailed, but any discussion of von Neumann probes was like catnip. I decided I wouldn't need to change before meeting my soon-to-be ex-employees for lunch. I left the convention center and headed for the agreed-upon restaurant, grinning at the spectacle around me. Science fiction conventions inevitably spilled out onto the streets. Stormtroopers, Chewbacca-i, and Enterprise crew critters wandered everywhere. Throngs of fans filled the sidewalks and crossed the streets, with or without traffic light assist. I'd seen more than a few exchanges of middle fingers, accompanied by suggestions of an autoerotic nature. Great fun. Fans packed the restaurants 24/7, but the waitstaff didn't complain. Nerds tend to overtip. I'd heard that the casinos were less happy with the level of gambling. Turns out nerds understand probability. I made it to the restaurant without losing any body parts and found my group. "To TerraSoft," Carl raised his glass as he gave the toast. "TerraSoft," the rest of us raised our glasses in response. Carl, Karen, and Alan had been my first hires at Intergator Software. They had been loyal and patient through the early hard times, and I had made them shareholders in the company. My engineering design and analysis application had eventually grown to be the number one product in its niche, outselling competitors like TerraSoft by a significant margin. TerraSoft reacted with a truly eye-popping buyout offer, and we were now all sharing in the windfall. These three might still have to work for a living, but they wouldn't have to make mortgage or car payments. I had invited the trio to spend the week in Las Vegas on my dime. Only Carl took me up on the offer of the VIP con pass, the other two pleading sanity. Alan and Karen stated their intention to see every single Las Vegas show. At several per day, they looked like they were approaching saturation. "How are you holding up, Bob?" Carl looked at me with one eyebrow raised. "Pretty good. I signed with Cryo Eterna this morning." Karen made a low growling sound and looked away. She didn't need to say anything. She'd already made her opinion very clear on that subject. I waggled my eyebrows at her and continued, "And I just went to a couple of very interesting panels, exploring the galaxy and designing a von Neumann probe." Alan laughed. "No theme there. Not at all. Engineers. Jeez."
"Yeah, but how are you doing, Bob?"
Carl gave me the hairy eyeball. Carl had managed to navigate the tricky pathway of being an employee and becoming a friend without looking like he was brown-nosing. I guess I owed him the courtesy of not pretending to misunderstand. "A lot better, Carl. Jenny episodes are down to a couple a day.
I might even be ready to rejoin the human race soon.
The woman was an idiot,
Karen muttered.
You should have taken your mother up on her offer.
That forced a chuckle from me. My mother doesn't actually know how to arrange a hit, Karen. I don't think. I pulled out my phone and glanced at it. Speaking of which, she texted me. I'll have to phone her back soon or she'll just keep sending more texts. She's kind of like the Terminator that way.
So it is genetic.
I mimed exaggerated laughter at Carl and he grinned back, unrepentant. After a moment, he waved a hand dismissively and changed the subject.
Anyway, part of the purpose of coming to the con this year was as a distraction from the breakup, right? So how are the panels?
Karen groaned and I leaned forward to put my elbows on the table.
Really interesting. Dr. Carlyle theorizes that life will generally be similar on different planets with similar climates, and maybe even digestible by humans. Panspermia, you know, common biological origins.
Horse cookies. No, seriously, Alan. He gave a pretty good argument for a common chemical basis for life. Not Star Trek level compatible, but we could probably subsist on an alien ecosystem.
I'll wait and see, Alan said. How about the other one? Space probes?
Von Neumann probes. Automated probes that reproduce as they visit star systems. Turns out nanites are out and 3D printers are in for self-replication.
Carl nodded. As advancing technology leaves fiction behind. Again.
Wait, what? Alan said, looking perplexed.
Carl and I both smiled indulgently. Alan was not a science geek, despite a background in software development. I gestured with my hands as I described the idea.
You've seen 3D printers, right? Printing things like plastic parts, medical prosthetics, and toys.
At his nod, I continued.
So?
Take it to the next level. Have them able to deliver any element, one atom at a time, according to a design. You could, in principle, print literally anything solid.
Including parts to make more probes, Carl added. Using whatever elements they find in the systems they visit.
Alan glanced at me.
This would work?
I minored in physics, Alan. You guys know that.
I think it's completely plausible.
I paused for a moment to taste my beer, then looked around at the others.
And the engineering...
You're really going to freeze your head.
We all turned to face Karen.
Here we go, Alan muttered.
She glared at Alan, then at me.
When they revive you, if they revive you, it'll probably be long after everyone you know is dead.
Including Jenny, Alan said, sotto voce.
Karen glared at him again.
Whatever. Your family will be dead, your friends will be dead. How are you good with that?
I looked at her for a moment, considering my response. I'm a humanist, Karen. You know that. No afterlife. If I die, my choices are revival or nothing. I'll take my chances with whatever I wake up to. Karen's expression grew even more thunderous, and she opened her mouth for a retort. Fortunately, the waiter picked that moment to arrive with our lunch. The odor of hamburgers, caramelized onions, and vinegarized fries wafted around the table as the plates were set down in front of us. By the time the food was distributed, the moment of tension had dissipated. I dropped a trail of shoes and clothes behind me and settled onto the king-size bed. The daily rate on the executive suite was ludicrous, but the luxurious bed alone was worth the price. One could get used to this. Oh, yes. I set the alarm so I wouldn't sleep the whole afternoon and pulled out my phone. My mother really would keep texting me if I didn't call her back. The phone rang twice at the other end before a voice came on.
Hi, Robert. Has it been a year already?
Ha ha. Hi, Mom. Got your text. No, I don't need a contract taken out on what's-her-face. Thanks. I'm at the Vortex, having a great time. Okay, bye. She laughed into the phone. This was a game we always played. I acted impatient and tried to end the call, but we both knew I'd stay on as long as she wanted.
I'm fine, Robert. Thanks for asking.
And how are the mosquitoes?
The mosquitoes are fine. They miss you and your delicate Nordic skin. Are there no mosquitoes in San Diego?
Not like Minnesota, Mom. One of the reasons I moved there.
Hmm. And how are you doing, son? The offer's still open on what's-her-face. I knows these guys.
Thanks, but I don't want to have to visit you in jail. I sighed.
Look, Mom,
people cheat. It happens. We weren't married yet. I'd have hated to find out after we tied the knot. I'm good now.
Really? Can you hear disbelief?
My mother didn't say a word. Maybe it was her breathing. Whatever, I decided it was a good time to change the subject.
So, how's everyone?
Your father's fine. He's in the workshop. Still trying to get that pile of junk to start. Your sisters are here for a visit, by the way. They visit their poor ailing mother. Andrea is motioning that she'd like to mock you for a bit.
Okay, put her on. I need my massive ego kicked out from under me. There was some muffled conversation, then.
Hi, little brother.
I'm older than you.
Not what I meant.
I smiled to myself at the sound of her voice and at the traditional exchange. Andrea, Elena, and myself were as close as siblings could be. The two girls were twins only in that they were born at the same time. They had literally 12 inches difference in height between them. And Andrea never let me forget that she had an inch on me as well.
So, rich guy, how are things out in Silicon Valley?
I could hear the smile in Andrea's voice. She'd been doing this comedy routine ever since I'd moved west.
It's Silicon, Andrea, and that's in Frisco.
I watch TMZ. I stand by my comment.
Ooh, the butthurt is strong in this one.
Andrea laughed. We spent a few minutes more exchanging insults, updating news bites. Then I told her to say hi to Elena and Dad for me.
Thank God for family. And thank God for a couple thousand miles of distance.
When everyone was home at the same time, I could generally take it for about half an hour before I retreated into the basement. Usually Dad followed about 10 minutes later. There'd be the mutual eye rolling, and we'd settle down without a word to read or watch TV. My father and I were both loners by disposition. We could sit in the same room for hours, not say 5 words to each other, and both be completely comfortable. It drove my mother crazy. I was surprised when the alarm went off. I hadn't intended to fall asleep. I jumped out of bed and got ready as quickly as I could. I would be meeting the gang for dinner, but I wanted to spend some time at the actual convention. The Vortex was a 3-day gyrating bag of crazy, and I wanted to catch as much of it as I could. You couldn't truly say you'd been to a science fiction con until you'd been run over by Farscape cosplayers, threatened by at least one drunken Darth, and had bought a cheap plastic movie prop for more than its weight in gold. Woo-ha! The elevator opened, and I stepped out into the lobby. The doorman nodded to me as I approached and held the door open. As usual, I wasn't sure if I should tip him or not. I decided to give him a large tip when I checked out, just in case. The Las Vegas air hit like a hammer when I stepped out of the air-conditioned hotel. I stopped and let a gaggle of Enterprise crew critters, several Ferengi, 2 Chewbaccas, and a stormtrooper wander past. They were loud, truculent, and appeared to have been sampling Terran alcohol to excess. After a few seconds of semi-coherent argument, they turned and crossed the street, more or less as a unit. I smiled and shook my head. Then I walked the extra 50 feet to the crosswalk. I wasn't in that much of a hurry. As I started to cross, I heard a flurry of hurled insults, blaring horns, and squealing tires. I turned toward the noise, and everything went into slow motion. The car came around the group, the driver's mouth moving as he leaned out the window. He turned forward and looked right at me, and his eyes went wide. Tires squealed as the car went into a 4-wheel lock.
You have got to be kidding me.
There was a flash of light, a moment of unimaginable pain. I could hear voices, urgent voices, calling out about codes. Someone in the background declaring that they had a right to be there. Something about a power of attorney, last will and testament. Angry responses. A calm voice, much closer. Mentioning time of death. The voices and the light faded, and the world ended. 2. Bob version 2.0. I snapped back to consciousness. There was no transition, none of the normal vagueness you get when you wake up. I remembered the car coming at me, which I thought was odd. I would have expected the last few seconds to be lost as they didn't have time to enter long-term memory. On the other hand, maybe the last few seconds had been lost. I lay there without moving or opening my eyes and did careful inventory. I felt no pain. In fact, I couldn't feel my arms, my legs, or my body at all. I was getting none of the normal proprioceptive cues that would tell me if I were lying down, comfortable, or anything. Not really a good sign. Complete paralysis seemed a likely explanation. I experienced a moment of panic, followed immediately by a kind of bemused surprise. The panic seemed to be purely intellectual. I had no sensation of elevated breathing, increased heart rate, or fight-or-flight muscle tension. Nothing. While I was normally very analytical, this seemed especially Vulcan, even for me. Wow. Am I paralyzed from the forehead down? Maybe I'm in an induced coma? If so, it's not a very good one. Gathering my resolve, I opened my eyes. Or tried to. Nothing happened. This time I did panic. Being blind was the stuff of nightmares for me. For a few moments, my thoughts spun out of control. I thought of movies I would never see, books I would never read. But again, the panic didn't self-reinforce. No adrenaline rush, no nothing. I couldn't think of a medical condition that would do that. Maybe drugs. Good ones. I was getting a little weirded out. Over and above the panic thing, I mean, I decided on drugs as a good working hypothesis. Determined to get a handle on things, I tried again. Really thought about opening my eyes, the mechanics, the feeling of my eyes opening. And with no transition, I could see. There are no words to describe my relief with that small victory. I appeared to be sitting up since I was looking at a wall instead of a ceiling. The room could be a hospital room or a lab or any nondescript government office. The walls were painted in that peculiar off-white tone that new construction always seemed to start out with. The far wall had a large window currently shielded by white, something. I thought at first it might be Venetian blinds, but they seemed to be actually printed on the glass. I expected to see part of my body in the foreground, perhaps under plain hospital sheets, but instead there was just a flat plane, like maybe a desktop. Just beyond the flat plane, a man sat consulting a tablet. He looked, I kid you not, exactly how most of us visualize Sigmund Freud, right down to the lab coat. He can't actually be a shrink. That would just be too cliche. Is he here to talk to me about my injuries? It has to be pretty bad if they have a counselor ready and waiting for me to wake up. There was something off about him, though. The shirt he was wearing looked almost clerical in cut. And his watch. It took me a moment longer to realize I was experiencing a problem with perspective. The room seemed to be too deep and narrow, and Freud seemed to be about 6 feet from front to back. In fact, when he turned his head, his nose seemed to stick about a foot out from his face. As I examined this odd optical illusion, I felt a shifting sensation and heard a whirring sound, and the perspective corrected itself. Before I could begin to analyze the sensation and sound, Freud looked up and smiled. Good. You're awake. I tried to respond, but what came out was something like a cross between a cough and static. For God's sake, that sounded like a voice synthesizer having a breakdown. Freud put down the tablet, leaned forward, and rested his arms on the desk, or table, or whatever. Please keep trying. It can take a few attempts for the guppy interface to mesh. I considered what he'd said. It immediately brought up 3 points. Point one, I wasn't dead. Well, okay, I think therefore I am yada yada. Call that one proven. Point two, I wasn't good as new. In fact, I appeared to be speaking through a voice synthesizer, but doing so by mental control, which meant, point three, that the technology had advanced significantly since I'd been hit by the car. How long had I been out? And what the heck was a guppy interface? I tried again, concentrating on forming the words. Someone want to fill me in on what's going on? Freud clapped his hands once. Excellent. I am Dr. Landers, Bob. I will answer any questions you have, and I will help to prepare you for your new life. New life? What's wrong with my old one? I already don't like where this is going.
Dr. Landers pulled the tablet over so that it was directly in front of him.
So, Bob, what's the last thing you remember?
A car coming right at me. I was sure it was going to hit me. I'm pretty sure it did.
It did indeed, Bob. You arrived at the hospital in critical condition with a very poor prognosis. Per your contract with Cryo Eterna, they were standing by with a cryo container when time of death was pronounced.
Well, good to know my money wasn't wasted anyway. So what year is it?
Dr. Landers laughed.
So nice to talk to a subject so quick on the uptake. It is June 24th, 2133, and we are currently in New Handeltown, which would have been Portland in your day.
I was surprised by that.
So that's 117 years.
Wait, where did that come from? I'd always been able to do math in my head with no effort, but it normally required me to at least go through the calculation steps. This answer had arrived as if spoken in my ear.
Huh, something to investigate later. Add to to-do list.
I turned my attention back to the doctor. The shirt made a little more sense now. Styles would change in 100-plus years. I really wanted to get a look at that watch, though.
Whose handle?
I asked.
Ah, now, Bob, we're getting ahead of ourselves. I have an established script for bringing candidates up to date, and history lessons come later.
So, what happened to old Handeltown?
Dr. Landers smiled and shook his head in mock sorrow. I sighed and nodded. Well, I tried to nod. My field of view didn't move, so I had control over my eyes, but not my head. I was starting to suspect some kind of locked-in syndrome. Instead, I grunted.
Right. So, can we talk about how much of me is still human? This artificial voice thing tells me that you haven't been able to make me good as new. How much is Borg? Should I ask for a mirror? Or would that be a bad idea?
Ah,
Dr. Landers glanced down at his tablet and hesitated, then looked back at me.
It would be inaccurate to compare you to a Borg. If I remember my Trek trivia correctly, they are at least partly human. I think Mr. Data would be a better comparison.
I simply stared at him for what seemed like forever. My mind was blank. I couldn't seem to form a thought. Finally, I found my voice.
Excuse me?
I noted almost in passing that I still wasn't having a panic attack. For the first time, I suspected I knew why.
You, Bob, are what most people would call an artificial intelligence. Although that's not strictly accurate, you are a copy of the mind of Robert Johansson, created by scanning his cryogenically frozen brain at the subcellular level and converting the data into a computer simulation. You are, essentially, a computer program that thinks it's Robert Johansson. A replicant.
Does that mean I'm immortal, then?
Dr. Landers looked startled for a moment, then threw his head back and laughed.
That is definitely not the reaction I normally get. We seem to have skipped the denial phase entirely. I'm feeling more and more confident about our decision to replicate you.
Well, thanks. I think... So then I'm... That is, Bob is still alive. Or still dead, I mean... Still in cryo?
No, I'm afraid not.
Dr. Landers shifted uncomfortably in his chair.
The recording process is destructive. We have to thaw the brain sufficiently to be able to measure the synaptic potentials without allowing ice crystals to form. Chemicals are involved which render the brain non-viable. There's no point in trying to refreeze it afterwards. The revelation hit me with a jolt, almost like touching a live wire. I don't know why I should be more bothered by the fact of original Bob being dead. Either way, I was a computer program. But somehow the idea that I was all that was left of Bob felt like being stabbed. Bob had been discarded.
But that means you killed me.
The doctor sighed. And that's the cue for the history lesson. He settled himself more comfortably in his chair and assumed that far-off expression people get when they're lecturing. In 2036, the USA elected an over-the-top, unapologetic fundamentalist president named Andrew Handel. Yes, that Handel. During his term, he tried to ban election of non-Christians to any public post and tried to remove the constitutional separation between church and state. He was nominated, supported, and elected based on his religious views rather than on his political or fiscal expertise. And, of course, he appointed persons of similar persuasion to every post he could manage, in some cases blatantly ignoring laws and procedures. He and his cronies rammed through far-right policies with no thought for consequences. In a number of cases, when challenged on the results, he declared that God would not allow their just cause to fail. He eventually brought the USA to its knees in an economic collapse that made the 2008 recession look like a picnic in the park. Dr. Landers tapped his tablet absentmindedly. It was obvious to me that he knew the whole spiel by rote. In the next election, the public voted in the USA's first and only overtly atheist president, Desmond Ahern, mostly in reaction to the Handel travesty. Needless to say, the religious right went ballistic. In 2041, they staged a successful coup, and thus was born the free American independent theocratic hegemony. It took me perhaps a millisecond to parse out the acronym. I groaned.
How long do you suppose it took them to work that out?
Dr. Landers frowned. The official history doesn't mention Ahern or the coup at all, and Handel is credited with being voted in after running on a platform of creating a theocracy. And just so you know, Bob, criticism of the government is a felony punishable by, re-education. It's certainly something to be avoided. As a machine, though, you'd just be deactivated. Part of my job is to instruct you in right thinking so you can become a good servant of the state.
Are you going to get in trouble at all? Some of your comments seem, you know, insufficiently respectful.
The Ministry of Truth, which is backing this venture, is surprisingly pragmatic. They are concerned with results and have guaranteed us that they will not interfere as long as they get what they're paying for. The doctor frowned. Some of the other ministries may be less so. We are cautious during any ministry visits.
Got it. So anyway, I get to live out my days operating a garbage truck or something as a good servant of the state?
Well, on that subject. You see, one of the first acts of the new theocracy was to declare all cryogenic facilities blasphemous and all corpuscles truly dead. They confiscated the client's assets, all those fiscal vehicles that you and others had set up to pay for your long-term storage. And finally, they auctioned off all the cryo company's assets, which included a bunch of deep-frozen clients with no legal standing.
Auctioned us off? Wouldn't the properly orthodox thing to do be to bury us? Not that I'm advocating that right now, you understand.
Dr. Landers looked angry for a moment. Did theologues limit themselves to logical or consistent behavior in your day?
Point taken.
I considered the doctor's explanation.
So I actually belong to someone?
To the company I work for, as a matter of fact. Applied Synergetics, Inc. is engaged in a sort of economic competition with Total Cyber Systems to supply robotic servants to society. We attempt to integrate replicants into useful machinery, while TCS creates artificial machine intelligences, AMIs, from the ground up. I chuckled, or tried to. What came out of the voice synthesizer was a long way from what I intended. Dr. Landers winced.
That'll get better, don't worry. By the end of this session, your voice will be indistinguishable from human. And to answer the unspoken but obvious question, AMIs at the moment are only authorized for very, very simple tasks with low risk or heavy supervision. Some years ago, some AMI-based pest control equipment at a local mall had a psychotic break and decided people qualified as targets. Dozens of patrons were hurt and several were killed before they deactivated the devices.
I chuckled again. This time, it sounded less like a printer jamming.
On the other hand, Dr. Landers continued, replicants aren't any better at multitasking than they were when alive, which is why we add the Guppy interface to offload tasks.
And about 4 out of 5 replicants go insane when they discover what has been done to them. He looked in my direction with a wry expression.
Not to mention that most cryo subjects were wealthy and don't take well to the idea of becoming indentured servants in their next life.
The image of some ex-CEO being told he would now be driving a garbage truck made me laugh out loud.
So, we can find it difficult to get the right replicant for the right job, and a certain percentage go insane anyway after a while.
That was a sobering thought. I had a bad feeling that I might be looking down that particular chasm later. Right now, this all felt like it was happening to someone else. Questions about individuality and the existence of souls poked at the edge of my awareness. With an effort, I pushed them away to concentrate on the now.
80% failure rate. Kind of sucks, Doc. How do you stay in business?
One success, Bob, can be installed in many units. Most of the mining equipment in operation today is controlled by one Rudolf Casini, who was a miner in his former life as well. Matching temperament to task is the key.
The doctor hesitated for a moment, then added, and of course we cultivate multiple candidates. I tried to raise my non-existent eyebrows, and I was annoyed when nothing happened.
Am I in a competition, then?
Well, yes and no. We have activated 5 candidates for this project. Statistically, 4 of you will go insane and be purged. If more than one of you gets through the training phase with your sanity intact, then yes, we'll have to make a choice. The project requires only one replicant.
And the loser?
Dr. Landers shrugged.
Garbage truck. Or maybe just stored pending another opportunity.
Not good. Not good at all. The prospect of going insane wasn't exactly at the top of my bucket list, but the idea of cheating death, more or less, then just being relegated to menial labor, really sucked. Being turned off? Even more so. It would appear that I was in a competition and one with the highest of stakes for me. I was going to have to take this very seriously, and I would have to assume that the other candidates were equally well suited to whatever task the project required. I would simply have to be better, and the first step was information gathering.
So, what's the job?
There's really no point in discussing specifics at this early stage. It would be a distraction, at best.
Well, no joy there.
Can you tell me about my opponents?
No, Bob, there's no reason to. You'll never meet them. Best that you not humanize them in any way.
That made sense in a very cold, clinical way, but I wasn't making much headway on the information-gathering front so far.
Okay, next question. Why am I not more panicked about all of this? This is absolutely bizarre. I'm dead. I mean, original me is dead. I'm a computer program. I'm property. Why am I not running in tight little circles, waving my hands in the air, apart from the obvious reason, I mean?
The doctor smirked, but he didn't really seem amused.
We can't modify your personality, Bob. It's an emergent property. Attempts to do so have resulted in, non-viable subjects, so it's all or nothing. But we can control the endocrine simulation routines. Panic depends on a feedback loop involving adrenaline. We simply limit that. You can't panic, or get angry, or frightened. You can only be deeply concerned, so to speak.
And with that, you still have an 80% failure rate?
I tried to wave a hand. I'd always talked with my hands a lot, so when that failed as well, I said in exasperation, "Say, am I going to get some appendages at some point? This jack-the-bodiless business is getting on my nerves. Circuits, whatever." Dr. Landers nodded. "Actually, Bob, I think we've made very good progress today. You were obviously a very rational person and are handling this better than I could have hoped for. We'll continue tomorrow, and I'll see if I can get you some peripherals." Dr. Landers lifted his tablet and poked at it. "Wait, no, I..."
3. Bob, June 25th, 2133. I snapped back to consciousness. I could see that Dr. Landers wore a different colored shirt, still in that weird clerical style, so I assumed it was at least a day later. He was concentrating on his tablet and just starting to look up. I poked at my own psyche, looking for any trace of panic, insanity, or even deep concern. It didn't feel like being doped up. I'd been doped up, like when I was getting my wisdom teeth out. I didn't enjoy that sensation. I also had never enjoyed the sensation of getting drunk, of not being in control of my own mind. In this case, I was in complete control of my thoughts. In fact, I felt at the top of my game, like I did when I first got into the office after an excellent night's sleep, like no problem or puzzle could possibly stand before me. On the other hand, my parents were long since dead, my sisters as well, Alan, Karen, Carl, all the people that I'd known. I had a clear mental image of Karen glaring at me, arms crossed, "I told you so," written across her face. But thoughts of my family and friends brought only a mild feeling of regret, likely due to the endocrine controls. That, more than simply the fact of being software, made me feel less than human. It was hard to be upset with Dr. Landers about the situation. There didn't seem to be any malice involved. Events had just evolved logically over time and culminated with me as a computer program. And so far, this state of being seemed to have its advantages. If Bob was dead, if he'd been run over by a car, then this was basically a free life, a potentially immortal one, no less. Maybe I'd just roll with it, at least for the moment. I could always reevaluate if I ended up in second place. Be careful what you wish for. No kidding. So, what else came with being a glorified computer program? Maybe I could communicate with that guppy interface. Systems check, square root of 234,215, 483.957642. Damn, that's cool. Do I have a date function? Current date. 21-33-06-25-08-42-24-235. Woohoo! I'm data! At the tone, the time will be 8:43. Beep! Dr. Landers looked surprised for a moment, then laughed.
"You have a number of functions like that, Bob. You just need to learn how to access them. Part of your training will concentrate on that area." I tried to nod out of habit and was surprised when my field of view bobbed.
"Hey, I've got neck control!" I swiveled my head and found to my delight that I could rotate my field of vision all the way around like an owl.
The room presented no surprises. As I suspected, I was actually on a desk. Beside me was a Waldo, a remote manipulator arm. It was small and very basic compared to industrial models, just a two-digit pincer grip with a shoulder, elbow, and wrist joint. I decided to see if it was accessible. After all, that was probably on the agenda for today. It seemed to take forever, although my date-time function said less than a half second had elapsed before the Waldo moved at my command. I waved it around and snapped at the air with the pincer, then turned back to Dr. Landers. The doctor stared at the Waldo with a bemused expression. Then a smile slowly formed, and he said with a wry shake of his head,
"For today's exercise, we'll get you to attempt to move a manipulator arm."
He shook his head and sighed.
"So much for today's training schedule, Bob. You're doing very well, so far.
I think we'll bump up the Romer test. I'd originally scheduled this for a week from now after some more preliminary orientation, but..."
Dr. Landers picked up the tablet and aimed a finger.
"Oh, not again. Wait! Don't do..."
I found myself in a different room in the same institutional off-white color.
A rack on one wall contained some 32 small mechanical devices. In front of each device, a red light glowed. Directly in front of me was a table with a number, 128, of blocks. The far wall contained a window, and Dr. Landers stood on the other side.
"Will you please stop doing that?" I said.
I attempted to glare at him.
"Would you prefer that I pick you up and carry you around under my arm?"
Dr. Landers held a poker face for a couple of seconds, then smiled.
"Actually, you and the other candidates all reside in large, expensive cubes of electronics, tucked safely away in an air-conditioned room elsewhere on the premises. I'm merely switching your peripheral functions from room to room. The you in this room is a stereoscopic camera on a mechanical arm."
He waited for any comments from me, but I had nothing at the moment. He gestured toward the rack.
"The shelves contain remote observation and manipulation devices, or roamers. Your goal will be to stack the blocks using as many roamers as possible. We'll start with one roamer to give you the feel of it."
Dr. Landers played with his tablet, and the light in front of one of the devices on the rack went from red to green.
"The roamers contain a low-level AMI and can perform basic actions without active supervision, but they have no will of their own and require direction. Please attempt to move the roamer to the table and stack some blocks. Your guppy will provide contact with the roam interface and will provide feedback as necessary."
I looked intently at roamer number one. "Status, ready."
"Okay, that's a good start. Stand up."
The roamer stood. It looked vaguely like a spider with a stance width of about 8 inches, 20 centimeters when not constrained.
"Oh, shut up!"
I inspected the roamer as best I could from a distance. "I wonder how it's supposed to manipulate the blocks." I waited a moment. "Well?"
"Feedback disabled by user request."
"Oh, great. I've hurt its feelings." I concentrated on the roam interface. "Enable feedback." Immediately, diagrams and schematics appeared in my vision. I examined them in fascination. The roamers were constructed with radial symmetry, no real front or back. 8 limbs matched with 8 sets of sensors. Each appendage could be a leg or could split into 3 digits to act as a manipulator. In addition, different legs had specialized functions built in. Some legs could be screwdrivers, grinders, torches, and cutters of various kinds. Some of the tech was brand new as well. One neat gizmo was a magnetically controlled plasma cutter that I would consider the real-life version of a lightsaber.
"Now, how do I get it to the table?"
"Can it jump the distance? Probability of damage to unit, 40%. So, that's a no."
"How about climbing down?"
"Oh, wait!" I called up the schematics again.
"Variable attachment surface tension." Wow, these people sure love their acronyms.
I visualized the roamer climbing down the shelf. A window popped up in my field of vision, which allowed me to see through the roamer's viewpoint. The roamer walked straight down the wall. The VAST system provided a secure grip. In seconds, I had the roamer up the table legs and onto the table. This was my first opportunity to examine my tabletop self. From the roamer's point of view, I saw a mechanical arm similar to the Waldo I'd learned to control, with a pair of cameras attached at the end. A small speaker between the cameras was probably where my voice originated. That was my face, such as it was. It reminded me of the robot from the movie Short Circuit. I moved my head around, and the roamer's video showed the arm moving, the twin cameras swaying on the end of it. I waved one of the roamer's legs, and I could see the roamer perform the action. Seeing myself and seeing me seeing myself made me feel existentially dizzy, so I turned my attention to the blocks. They appeared to be regular children's building blocks, the kind that have been available forever. Half the faces showed letters or numerals in bas-relief, painted in primary colors, and the other faces had simple engraved images. I noted that all the images were overtly religious in nature. I filed that factoid away in my to-do for future review. The roamer didn't need to have each movement supervised, but it did need to be told the parameters for the task. Within seconds, it had created a 5x5 platform of blocks. I then instructed the roamer to place a 4x4 layer on top of that, centered, and repeat.
The roamer moved with impressive speed if I avoided trying to give it moment-by-moment orders. In seconds, it had completed a pyramid. I looked over at Dr. Landers. Ta-da! The doctor nodded, then played with his tablet. Three more lights went green on the rack of roamers.
Again, please, Bob. This time with multiple roamers.
Over the next few hours, Dr. Landers set various tasks for me that involved different numbers of roamers. Each exercise had an obvious training goal, and I found myself becoming increasingly impressed with my new capabilities. He occasionally introduced new materials, including at one point something that reminded me of a Meccano set. The roamers easily handled each test. I simply had to set the overall tasks, and they would operate with speed and efficiency. There was only one glitch the whole morning, when I was not quite clear enough with my directions. One roamer ended up tossing another one across the room. I know the doctor said the AMIs had no will of their own, but I could swear the tossee acted surly afterward. At some point during the session, I became aware that the training room was completely sealed. There was no door, and there weren't any air ducts. Come to think of it, that window looked quite thick and very securely framed. Are they afraid of me? Or the roamers? Or both? Another item on the to-do for review. 4. Bob, July 15th, 2133. I snapped back to consciousness. That's getting really old, Dr. Landers.
Sorry, Bob, but it is standard procedure to put replicants into standby when they are not actively involved in training. You feel like you are operating at normal human speed when you interact with me, but once you are left to your own thoughts, you'll find you experience time at a much higher subjective rate. 8 hours can be an eternity. I've had replicants that seem to be doing okay suddenly go psychotic overnight.
The doctor looked down at his shoes for a moment.
In fact, we've lost one of your competitors in the last 24 hours. She went into a loop and could not be brought back. We restored from backup, but the backup went down at the same point, so now there are 4.
I sighed and noted with mild satisfaction that the sigh sounded real. It was pretty obvious that I was being kept as busy as possible when active and not being given any quiet time. Probably that was an attempt to avoid the insanity issue. I was ashamed to realize that I was more glad than sad about the other replicant. One less competitor. And I appreciated Dr. Landers' honesty, but sooner or later, I was going to have to deal with this whole existential crisis thing. And I still needed time to grieve for my family. I'm sorry to hear that, I said. But presumably we're all being treated the same, so the switching off thing doesn't seem to be the answer. Instead, how about keeping me busy with intellectual activity? How about some study time? Maybe with access to whatever the internet has evolved into? I'd like to see what I've been missing for the last 117, I didn't ask, years.
Well, the internet does not exist anymore. At least not domestically. Far too anarchic. Far too hard to control. And too many opportunities for sin, wrong thinking, and temptation. However, we have online libraries, and some of the history might even be relatively accurate. I will see if I can connect you up to one of the better ones.
Are there genealogy records? I might have relatives still alive. I'd be very interested.
As a matter of policy, Bob, we don't encourage that. In any case, such information is not in the public record. Under faith, information is not freely available by default. Sorry.
At that moment, I was happy that I had no face. This was the final blow, cutting me off from my former humanity. Not only was my immediate family dead, I would not be able to reconnect with any descendants. I was truly, completely alone. Then the damned endocrine controls kicked in and my funk turned into a mild sadness. Wow, if I ever got control of my hardware and software, that was the first thing that would go out the window. Grieving required grief, and I was being robbed of that. I didn't like being property. I wasn't in a position to do anything about it at the moment,
but if the situation changed, there would be some adjustments. Meanwhile, I would shut up, listen, learn, and be a good little robot. The important thing was to not give them any reason for concern. And to stay sane. And to win the competition. But no pressure. 5. Bob, July 18th, 2133. Sigh. Morning, Dr. Landers. Didn't you just leave?
Good morning, Bob.
Uh-oh. That wasn't Dr. Landers' normal tone. I had been playing around with tuning my artificial senses, and I discovered that I could run Fourier analysis on voices in close to real time. The doctor's voice indicated high levels of tension. A second man stepped into view. Dr. Landers gestured toward him.
Bob, this is Senior Minister Travis. He's here to evaluate your progress.
I understood the unspoken message. This guy could pull my plug. I would have to tread very carefully. I would also have to clamp down on my tendency to make wisecracks, as his appearance seemed purpose-designed for a comedy routine. He reminded me of the old saying, stereotypes are valid first-order approximations. The man was the cliché of the old-time Bible-thumping, fire-breathing preacher. Tall and thin, with cheekbones and teeth that seemed to protrude from his face.
Even when he smiled, he glowered.
Good morning, Mr. Travis. I'm at your disposal. Wow, worst opening line ever.
Good morning, replicant. I'm here to evaluate fitness yours for a task which is the glory of the Lord on today and to a much extent lesser, the kingdom of our spiritual leaders, Thomas Handel III.
I was taken aback for a moment at his accent and mangled vocabulary. Of course, this was 100 years later, but Dr. Landers always sounded like anyone you might run into on the street. On the other hand, Landers had made it clear that dealing with replicants was his specialty. Perhaps that included speech training. All right, shoot, I said. Minister Travis turned to Dr. Landers in confusion. Dr. Landers shrugged.
Oh, there a 21st century is colloquialism. It means to have all the questions you desire.
Minister Travis nodded and glanced back at me.
I imagine statement in the current idiom is not a high priority since the intended use of subject.
Crying out loud, what? The current version of English was just too mangled to make sense of. Well, maybe there was a translator. After all, even in my time we had Google Translate. I dove into the library, and within milliseconds I found what I needed. I played the minister's last statement through the routine. I imagine instruction in current idiom isn't a high priority given its intended use. Oh boy, if I still had eyebrows, they would have risen right to my hairline.
He looked at me, or maybe toward me. I got the feeling he was addressing a microphone rather than talking to someone.
I routed all dialogue through the translation routine.
Did you go to church when you were alive?
Can they tell when I lie? Dr. Landers never said anything about it. Well, I doubt I'd end up worse off being caught in a polite lie rather than being honest about my opinion of religion. Occasionally, Minister Travis. Eastern Christmas, mostly. Without a family, there was no real pressure.
No children, then?
Not that I know of. That would have gone over well, moron.
Not
yet, Minister. And not likely now. Minister Travis nodded. The conversation continued in that vein for several minutes. The questions were decidedly non-technical. The minister seemed to be primarily interested in my attitude toward religion in general. I was very careful to be respectful and non-confrontational, to come across as a team player, and to avoid any hint of my true feelings about theism in general. Finally, Minister Travis seemed satisfied. He nodded to me, said goodbye to Dr. Landers, and left. Dr. Landers withdrew a hanky and wiped his brow. Damn, Doc. Was it that dangerous a situation? He didn't seem belligerent.
There was no way to predict, Bob. He showed up unexpectedly, and I had no time to prepare you or research the minister to find out whose side he's on.
Side? Faith has sides?
Surely you don't think our government is in complete agreement about everything?
Dr. Landers looked at me with a wry expression.
Faith is riddled with factions and power blocks, maybe even more than most governments. I guess it goes with the territory.
Dr. Landers pulled out the chair and sat down.
As it happens, Minister Travis is with the Ministry of Truth. They are financing this venture, so he would be considered